My name is Dave Pablo, and I am here at the 2019 Northeast Organic Farming Association conference in Saratoga Springs. And I'm speaking with, it's Eric, right? Eric?
Yep.
Eric Hupert. What's the name of your farm, Eric?
My farm is Deep Root Farm.
And I just went to a seminar that you had talking about basically your first year. And you covered, I have to say, a lot of material in that time. So I can't really condense it at all. But I guess what I'm wondering to start off with is, well, tell me about yourself. What kind of farm did you put together, and what was your background?
Sure, yeah. So as you said, it just finished. 2018 was my first year of full production on my own farm that I now own, operate, and live at with my wife and two kids. I'm now entering into my sixth year of farming overall. The first 4 years I spent at another medium-sized CSA farm outside of Rochester. That's where we're located, about 25 minutes outside of Rochester. And we do small-scale, highly diverse organic production vegetables.
What were you doing before you went into farming?
A lot of things, a little bit of everything. I spent a lot of time in and out of different aspects of the food industry. I've done some freelance web design, but largely kind of focused in nonprofit sector. My education, which is really what kind of led me into farming, was in international and community development. About 7 years ago, after about 4 or 5 years after my undergrad, I started a grad program in international development and was really compelled through some professors and content and some of those courses to really focus on food systems. And for me, as opposed to necessarily just working for a nonprofit or raising money for a nonprofit, which most jobs are in the sector, it just became apparent that growing food seemed to be the most important thing I could do to kind of fulfill the need to do something that mattered.
That's interesting. So a lot of people, when they get into farming, it's because, pardon the pun, but the bug of,
sure,
of, you know, growing food has just kind of gotten into them. But with you, it sounds like it was a much more kind of, I don't know, abstract decision?
Sure, yeah. I would say it was maybe a combination, a collision of things, kind of like, you know, a little bit cerebral, a little bit philosophical in the context, especially of my education and my studies focusing on, you know, what are best practices for developing strong communities and resilient economies, especially microeconomies. But I certainly did have that other half of it with the food bug. I mean, I had, you know, been members for years of different CSAs, connected to the local food scene in our own way, and just connected to the food scene at large. You know, my social circle is, you know, chefs and restaurant owners and farmers and things like that. So there was a little bit of everything that kind of came together. And then that tipping point really just led me down that road.
Mm-hmm. In your presentation, one of the first things that you hit on was that, you know, whatever you may feel about growing vegetables or fruit or animal husbandry or any of the rest of it, in a lot of ways this breaks down into numbers in terms of whether,
sure,
you're able to make a living and how that works.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously I just kind of gave the more ethereal answer to why I got into farming, but upon that decision, and especially upon the decision to, you know, run my own farm and operation, as I did stay in the, you know, the workshop, we can have all these great mission statements, but bottom line, if we're going to be an entrepreneur in farming or any other industry for that matter, square one better be economic viability or really just making money. And then how we connect those dots is what matters, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were a number of things that really stood out for me when you were speaking that made a lot of sense. I'm actually in the middle of looking for land myself. I've been,
sure,
renting for a couple of years and then also working for another farm. And before that, I was out in Washington State interning at different farms. But the way that you broke it down in terms of location and time and the condition of the soil, of course, but, you know, access to markets and convenience for your family members was very interesting.
For me, it was kind of about working backwards to get to where we ended up actually purchasing the land and doing that, in short, essentially starting with the numbers and what do I need to make and produce in order to make this work. And then really the number one thing for me was, you know, not just the ability to grow the vegetables. I know that I've been building that skill and so many of us can do that, but upon having them, where are we going to move them? How are we going to move product, you know, sales outlets? So starting with establishing the numbers and, business plan for revenue streams, then getting into the approach of how I want to go about growing that, what type of farming I want to do, and then letting that inform my site selection and how we looked for land. Because without that working knowledge to begin, I know for me, it would have been just too much of a blank slate. You know, there's a lot of different land out there, different sizes, different price points, different, you know, soil opportunities, and it can be quite daunting. But with that kind of framework, it really honed in on what we were looking for.
Mm-hmm. You've also you broke down the market in a way that was familiar, although a little bit different from what I've seen in the past. The first farm that I interned at out in Washington, they basically did a third in terms of restaurants and wholesale market, farmers markets, and CSA programs. But yours seemed to be a little bit more geared towards one.
It's certainly dependent on the diversity, and as I kind of explained, the sense of just diversity equals security, and they all have different metrics of value. But for me, again, at a relatively small scale, a relatively intensive growing space, and grossing $150,000, a big number, but not an astronomical number, one that you need to keep your margins pretty tight on, I kind of prioritized it like that. I mean, farmers markets, your highest margin, but it's the most volatile market, but that certainly will represent the largest revenue stream for us. It's how we're investing our future growth. And that would end, 84,000 or so of 150 is our goal. And then stepping down to the CSAs, which is still a steady income supply, a pretty middle of the road profit margin, but a great retention. You're building a core community and you're still getting good prices. And more importantly, you're getting that money up front when farmers need it to operate, to pay labor and seeds. Yeah, that would be roughly about 30% with 52,000 or so. And then that wholesale restaurant, which is one of my favorite ways to sell, but as could be expected, obviously your lowest margins, you're going to get the smallest prices at wholesale and even to restaurants, which is getting better in some ways, but that's just also the nature of the economy. And how those structures play out. And that really will be for us, we're building that into be about 10% of our revenue. And that would maybe be a little bit different if I had a bigger operation. But I believe at this point, and we'll see moving forward, that is the most viable breakdown of revenue streams at the size that we want to be in order to have the margins that we need in order to run a successful business.
Speaking of the health of the economy, Rochester, like many places in upstate New York, has suffered in recent decades. Of course, Rochester had Kodak for a long, long time, and not so much anymore. And Troy, where I live, has been in a deep depression for a long time and is really on the upswing right now. But it's almost, people are like, well, what's happening? And it's got to be problematic for a farmer to try and figure out who your customer base is. What are the things that are most solid?
Yeah, I think that Rochester is a city in progress, and there certainly has been kind of significant historical upticks, downticks in industry, with Kodak and some other parts of tech industry, Xerox, things like that. But there's also a pretty huge influx of new business, of young business, of small business. It's a juxtaposition because in the big narrative, you do hear about those more obvious cases. But then I think even just last week, it was Forbes or Time or somebody that Rochester was on a top 10 list of cities in the country for young people that they're moving to. We have a lot of great institutions, which great medical centers, and both of those things are always players in a strong local economy, because you've got, good high-paying jobs, and the city more and more, I think, students that are coming to Rochester are staying in Rochester. So it ebbs and flows, and because of that, I agree that, there is this variance in finding who our market is going to be and who we're selling to, and it can get a little bit daunting. We have solid farmers markets, and that's really helping kind of create a base framework. But even within that, for me, again, it comes down to, I need to make money. I want to fulfill my mission, and as I talked about, how do I bridge that gap between profitability and being really mission driven? And for me, that gets distilled down to, as I explained, really establishing what's my smallest viable market. And that's stealing from the wisdom of marketing author Seth Godin, who really talks about, good viability, good economic sustainability is rooted in not being all things to all people, but the right things to the right people. And that's a constant exploration. I mean, we certainly are new. We've only operated for 1 year, so we're very much still exploring who our critical mass is. But we do, like I said, have some good anchor points, some good frameworks with some farmers markets that we're involved in, a growing kind of community of CSAs. I'm building a lot of my CSA distribution strategy around corporate offices in the city. And I think on an interesting note on that level, you know, with healthcare costs changing and insurance being a harder benefit to offer to employees, a lot of companies are looking for different ways to incentivize their employees. You know, HSAs are getting a little bit bigger because deductibles are going up, you know, exponentially, things like that. One of the points of market entry that I'm really exploring is talking to HR directors and CEOs about offering some type of participating subsidy for CSA shares. It's a minor incentive for the company themselves. They subsidize $100 or $150 towards a $400 or $500 share. But that's significant enough, I think, in a lot of cases for someone then to jump in, maybe as a first-time CSA member, tapping into the local food system. So I see it as both a smart business strategy for me, but also broader. I think it's a tool that we can use as producers and sellers to help shape the approach towards local food in our communities.
That's great. That matches up very well, actually, with a seminar that I went to earlier today talking about prescription food,
sure.
You know, working with local health providers so that people get a better, less processed diet.
Yeah.
So we're just about out of time. Why don't you give people the way to contact you and maybe information about the markets that you're at?
Sure, yeah. My name is Eric Cooper. Deep Root Farm is my farm, and it's just deeprootfarm.com. You can check out kind of what we do, how we do it, where we show up each week. All that information's there. We're at the Brighton Market if you're a Rochester area listener. And we're there in the main growing season every Sunday. We have CSA kind of drops throughout the city. And I'd love to hear from anybody that might want to connect.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.